Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy welcome to our new ESPN Overlords week.
Yeah. Day.
Whatever. Era.
Either ESPN owns us, we own them. Could be both.
It's probably the former.
Maybe a weird profit-sharing type situation. Maybe we're a timeshare.
I'll take it.
But, for anyone who's living under a rock, I doubt you'd be able to happen upon this podcast and then find out the information. ESPN's John Wildhack will be taking over as the RNJD come August. He replaces Mark Coyle, who left for Minnesota a couple months back. And, Dan, I think everyone, for the most part, seems pretty on board. And I've seen a couple of dissenters here and there that don't love his lack of athletic administration background, but by and large, it seems like people view the move pretty positively.
Yeah, I mean, the lack of athletic administration is definitely, like, that's the premier concern. And I think we both would have, like, ideally, we would have loved to see, like, an experienced administrator, which is what we had in Mark Coyle. Obviously, the downside there is, you know, when you're going to get someone who is an experienced administrator moving up the ranks, like, they might move up the ranks on you or move, I guess, Midwest from the ranks from you. So not that, you know, many of us would consider Minnesota like this hugely big jump up, but obviously has its advantages. But I think in a lot of other ways, like, it checks off a lot of boxes. We've kicked around, like, the whole how important is it to have a Syracuse guy or an upstate New York guy. And I know we were both kind of like, you know, it'd be fine. Like, it's a fine thing to have. It's definitely not a bad thing. I think it's like a nice cherry on top. But obviously that's a big part of the news today. He's a SU, you know, 1980 grad, and there's a very good chance that he's taking a pay cut to come do this job at Syracuse. So it's a thing that he seems legitimately passionate about. So for those of you who thought, you know, having an SU guy was like the most important thing, it definitely checks that box. So it's a really interesting hire. Definitely not one that I think was on the radar for most of us. But I think there's some really high upside, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I saw the name from Pete DeMille this morning, it was, I think, a quick Google search was my first reaction. I feel like that was the first reaction of a lot of Syracuse folks. You'd probably have been surprised to know just how high up at ESPN he was. It seemed like a lot of people were rumoring that when John Skipper steps down at ESPN, that he could have been next in line. I said it in the Q&A that Sean and I did. I've said it online too. Like, it's, and you said it as well, it can't hurt to be an SU alum, but that was definitely not, you know, 1 through 5 on my priorities list. It doesn't seem like it was on the search committees either, at least according to them. It just seemed like it was a nice to have. I think in some ways it's good because then you get that, you get to walk right past that kind of, you know, acclimation period, that welcome period, and walk right into the let's get stuff done kind of time frame in the era. At the same time, it does seem like, at least in his kind of sit down with Syracuse.com, that he would be doing a little bit of that nonetheless, which, I mean, it is what it is. I don't think he's going to need the amount of time that Coyle did. I mean, Coyle needed a lot of time, I think, to get acclimated, especially because he's bounced around a lot. I feel like in this case, there's not, even if it's a couple weeks, it's still much better than we've seen in the past.
Yeah, it's an interesting move because even in his very brief tenure, Coyle kind of came in and he was kind of a fixer. Like, he was very much not Dr. Gross in a lot of ways, just in terms of like what his main jobs were. And obviously, he didn't have a chance to, like, fully oversee Syracuse football being fit, but he made a hire that we're all very bullish on. And obviously, Babers was then involved in this hire, so it seems like there should be at least, you know, some harmony there. And it also probably helps Babers that this is a guy not coming from the world of college athletics directly. So it's not like, you know, he's coming from, you know, Western Michigan, and he has PJ Fleck on the phone. Like, there's no inherent coaching connection here. So, like, a lot of the things that were issues under Dr. Gross were already in the process of being, if not fixed, like, accounted for under Coyle. So, you know, maybe we could have used another year or two of that. But now we have another big picture guy coming in where, I mean, I said on Twitter and I said in our Slack room and I said to everyone else I've talked to today in every medium, like, it should not be any surprise when you see the ESPN tag there, because obviously we know basically since the moment we joined the ACC network has been on the table. I forget the specifics. You can correct me if you know them off the top of your head, but I think if ESPN does not help launch a network in the next, what, year or two, or at least get the machinations of that in play, they have to pay the ACC money or something crazy like that.
Because this piece of information only came about recently, at least in the public eye, and no one from ESPN or the ACC has commented on that. And I believe it was some payout in the vicinity of 28 million or so. That I believe it was this year. Like, if something's not locked down by the end of 2016, at least it doesn't have to be started, obviously. But if we're not significantly down the path and just working out the kinks and negotiations, I believe it was about a $28 million payout to the ACC.
Yeah, it's something like that, which has been reported. And obviously, you know, we're not going to have an ACC network in a year from now, but all the indicators are that is something that is likely to happen. It might not be the exact, it might not be an analog for the SEC network. It might be something a little more digital, like a really souped up version of what they have now. I'm not even sure if there'd be like a full channel or whatnot, but there will be, it seems like the odds are there will be some kind of ACC network with ESPN, and having a former ESPN really high up as an AD at Syracuse, A, positions ACC well, and B, positions Syracuse really well to be a very important player in this. Obviously, we always hear, since we've joined the ACC, we always hear about the Tobacco Road Mafia and how those four schools, and specifically Duke and UNC, kind of dominate the conference. And it seems actually kind of funny to hear that now when you see like what happens in the Big 12 with Texas. It's like not even in the same stratosphere. No. But if you have Syracuse making playing this big role as maybe like the liaison directly to ESPN, even beyond what we've already had as a conference, I think that's a pretty good place for Syracuse to be. Like, you always want to have skin in the game. You always want to be important. And for Syracuse to have like this big role that's vital to the success of the conference as a whole, especially when, you know, I'm sure there's, I mean, obviously we have Clemson fans, but fans from a number of the older ACC schools probably still see us as kind of this weird, like, recent hanger-on attachment, who occasionally beats them in basketball. Having this like central role to the conference and the and how vital the network will be to the conference going forward, especially with, you know, the looming threat of constant expansion and realignment, I think that's a really good thing for SU. So that's exciting. So hopefully we're important. That's always good.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, I think the negotiations part is a big piece of it. And I know I mentioned in the Q&A too that Sean and I did was about, you know, kind of what role Newhouse could have and what role, you know, both current students and Newhouse grads could have. I mean, it's assumed that because the SEC network is based out of Charlotte, that an ACC network would probably run itself out of that same hub. Nonetheless, I don't really know how much more room they have over in Bristol if they want something a little more souped up. Up in the Northeast, I mean, Newhouse seems like a perfect kind of base camp in the conference footprint, directly on a conference campus. So yeah, again, this is based on nothing but you know, not even hearsay. This is just me just coming up with ideas. I think this could potentially create a really cool opportunity for Syracuse from an academic perspective down the road as well.
Yeah, I mean, imagine with this new campus we're getting, like this whole, I know that entire area of campus is being revamped as we've seen all the different layouts and maps and whatnot. Yeah, just stick the ACC network right there. Just stick it like next to Newhouse. Newhouse 4 is the ACC network. It's entirely staffed by Newhouse people and you know, whatever full-time employees they have. And let's run it out of old Cuse. Why not? Sounds like a great idea. I'm sure no one else in the conference will disagree.
You know, I feel like, I don't know if there'd be more rage from the rest of the conference or from all the non-Newhouse people at school who every single time, I mean, I know you were there for the back end. Were you there for when Newhouse 3 opened?
No. It was open for a couple of years before I got there.
Yeah, I was there when it opened, and the hand-wringing and hemming and hawing about a third Newhouse building at that time from everybody was always entertaining to me as a Newhouse person, and would definitely continue to be entertaining if Newhouse built something as part of a potential, you know, ACC, Syracuse, ESPN, you know, power grab on campus.
Are you saying there was controversy surrounding a thing happening on Syracuse's campus?
I know.
I can't believe it.
Shock.
Who would people have... got upset about a thing that happened in terms of something being built? That's mind-blowing to me.
So much anger, so much hand-wringing. Always, always, always. Oh, well. So I guess, Dan... other than the, you know, lack of, and actually, no, using that as a jumping off point, the lack of athletics administration thing obviously means that he doesn't have his quote unquote guys or gals that he's necessarily bringing in the door with him like almost any other AD candidate would. How do you think that shapes his staff? Do you think that we're going to see a lot of people continue in their current roles because he already is familiar with them? Do you think that we're going to see him clean house and maybe bring in some non-traditional candidates or maybe somewhere in the middle?
It's so hard to know because we were kind of still in transition from the DeRose administration, it feels like. Like, obviously there were holdovers and there were people that were still kind of doing their thing, but I feel like Coyle probably didn't even have his full team ready, and now he's taking some people back with him to Minnesota. I really hope that because he doesn't come from this kind of administration world, that he kind of balances his big picture business side of things with people who have worked in administration, whether those are Syracuse people or not. Like, you have to imagine that someone of his stature has plenty of connections because he was so high up at ESPN and they're so interwoven with so many different conferences. But I really hope that that's his focus is, you know, I will work on, you know, building the bridges back to the alumni and doing all of the fundraising and you know, being the face of this athletic department, which is something that he should supposed to be an incredibly passionate Syracuse fan and alum himself, which obviously is very important to a lot of people. But then in like the day-to-day operations, I really hope he has a really strong team that's done that before at a high level. And I mean, it'll be yet to be seen. That's why this is a really interesting hire, because it's not, I think it checks a lot of boxes for people, especially those who are focused on Syracuse ties. And I think that gives it a really high upside. But there's, you know, there's inherent risk whenever you hire someone who hasn't done a job before, especially one of this magnitude at this very crucial time in Syracuse athletics. So, but, you know, he didn't ride dip to, like, basically being a second or third guy at ESPN by not being smart and knowing what he's doing. So hopefully, you know, I'm sure he understands that, and I'm sure these discussions already happened with Siverud and everyone else.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think that's good to note Siverud's involvement too. I don't necessarily, you know, I don't necessarily see Wildhack as a puppet. I don't think he's going to be that at all, but I am curious if Siverud is done this as kind of a, like, here's someone I already know. Here's someone I already have a previous relationship with. Here's somebody who doesn't have an athletics or administration background or even, you know, kind of an academic background. And, you know, this is kind of someone who I can work with and help shape him and the role into the image I'm looking for. I think the one thing that Siverud has done, and I think it's split people down the middle, is that he's really kind of, he's had zero sacred cows. He's been very, very clear that the university will operate the way that he wants it to, and will function with his people in place and working to the efficiencies that he demands. I'm curious if this isn't part of that as well.
Yeah, it's very possible. I've actually been, like, it's a little counterproductive because, you know, we are both in some way or another members of the media. And obviously it's good for us when, you know, we have a little bit of access and behind the scenes. But I think it's impressive how little Siverud's administration leaks. Like, none of the really big things that we've had, obviously the dome stuff, which has been going on since before he was on campus, there seems to be leaks all the time. And I'm not even sure if, like, that's avoidable at this point.
No.
But in terms of his big hires, I mean, Coyle, we had a little bit more of a sense of Babers, but that's because he was so heavily rumored before anyway. But the two AD hires, like, they just happened. Like, we did not, I mean, maybe someone listed Mark Coyle, like, once, but he wasn't like one of the shortlist guys that everyone was trying to come up with, and no one had had his name is slipping. That's not good. I've been tweeting about him all day.
Wild Eck.
Yes. No one had him anywhere like near on their list, just because, you know, going and poaching a higher up from ESPN just didn't seem, I mean, if not unfeasible, just isn't the direction anyone was looking in. So the fact that his team seems to work so tightly and seemingly efficiently, just based on what we do know about these searches, is really impressive. And I think that excites me more than anything. He has, you know, he definitely has control of these situations, at least based on everything we know publicly.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and for a lot of us, you know, coming from the kangaroo court that was, you know, the Gross Cantor regime for so long, it just seemed like there were so many public flubs, so many embarrassing moments, so many silly missteps. And then you look at a guy like Severud, who's all business. He hired a guy like Coyle, who's all business. Baber seems like he's all business. Wild Hack, I mean, we'll see, but he seems like all business, and he's going to be kind of falling in line with what Severud wants. Again, some people might not love the amount of shakeups. I am personally all for them because I think that what was going on when I was on campus and a little bit before and definitely after as well, you know, under the regime that's officially out the door at this point, was not really what we were looking for as a university, as an athletic community and all that. I'm excited about what Severud has done to this point, and I am looking forward to a hell of a lot more of it.
Yeah, and I look forward to having an AD for more than 10 months. So yay for that.
Yeah, I mean, you know what, and this brings up a good point, too, because I was, you know, talking about Severud's hires. If we put his hires under the umbrella of anyone that he's been here for, so Coyle, Babers, Hopkins, technically, and now Wild Hack, I mean, jury's still out on three of those, but I haven't hated any of them in the moment or thereafter.
No, I still think the Coyle hire was a very good hire.
Agreed.
Like, what happened after, I think you have to divide, like, the process of making the hire and then, you know, the result of him leaving in 10 months, as no one could have foreseen that. I still think that was a really good hire. I think this, I'm probably a little shakier on this, but it's like I call it a healthy...
It's an out-of-the-box hire.
Skepticism, but that's because it was so out of the box. Coyle was very in the box in terms of, like, his, you know, we knew who he was. He was a very proven commodity. He came up through college athletics. So you knew, like, this guy knows what he's doing with running this department.
He was a reach.
Yeah. The downside was that he didn't have obvious connections here, and that obviously bit us. This new hire is very much, you know, the opposite. But I think if it works out, it could work out, you know, spectacularly. And, you know, if it doesn't, I mean, Syracuse is in a really good spot right now. And I mean, I don't think that, you know, in 5 years we're going to be getting run out of the ACC. So I don't know how poorly things could go, honestly. I think I'm pretty cautiously excited about the opportunity here. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's all you can ask for, really.
I would agree. And I think, yeah, if football shows itself on the right track or close, I think if football shows itself on the right track in a year or at least close to it, like if it's 5-7 with an improving product on the field, and the Olympic sports can keep up what they're doing and the basketball team can continue its, you know, run of just kind of stable success, I don't think anyone can really complain. Like you said, short of us getting run out of the ACC, it's hard to really mess this thing up at this point because we're in a power conference. We, as an athletic department, have really, you know, made great strides. I think in 5 years, it's outside of football not improving, which, again, it'll be debatable how much is on him versus how much of that would be on Babers and to an extent Coyle. It's kind of hard to screw this up, especially given his connection to the school and what he already knows about the job he's inheriting.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, there isn't, I don't think you can undersell that, like, clearly he really wanted to do this, and it's not going to be like, you know, if he does something, he's doing it both as an AD and as an alum. So it's going to be interesting. I think a lot of the people that we've heard from in terms of, you know, fans who thought they really needed a Syracuse die. Like, we will see how much that actually affects here.
Yeah, and I think we're going to say, and the one thing I do hope it doesn't affect, and feel free to disagree, I think that any hire should be from outside the family, if that makes sense, in terms of the folks under him. I know that some people are going to stay in, that's fine. But what I'd like to see is his support staff really come from outside of Syracuse's walls, because I do think that while there are benefits to having a Syracuse, you know, person up top, there's also a benefit to having fresh sets of eyes underneath to not just be yes men and women, but to actually, you know, provide some counterpoints. And you know that there's a lot of rising great people, especially in terms of, you know, female candidates, minority candidates. It's not to say that they're the only people that he can hire, but it's to say that there's alternative perspectives to the, you know, white male Syracuse grad all over the place. And again, rising names in college administration, folks who've done it at larger schools with bigger football traditions, all of whom could potentially, you know, add something. And I wouldn't doubt if, well, at least, I wouldn't say I wouldn't doubt, I'd say I would hope that we use, you know, some of his ESPN connections to connect us to those other schools, presumably, you know, Big Ten, SEC, ACC schools that ESPN has ties to help fill in, you know, those roles that still need to be sorted out.
Right. I think that's always very healthy. You always want to have like a mix of views and a mix of experiences. So, you know, just because our basketball staff works really well and is all Syracuse people does not mean that needs to be the entire athletic department. And obviously, you know, isn't the case across the board. So, yeah, I totally agree. I think hopefully he, like you said, uses these connections, and he should have many. I mean, he was, I think, the head of content at ESPN. He knows plenty of people, especially, like you said, SEC, Big Ten, ACC all have major ESPN ties. So I don't think there'll be any like shortage of potential people in the pool to add to the team here. I think it's going to be super interesting to see where he goes. It's like, even with Toil, you kind of knew, oh, you know, these are the people he could bring along with him. He trusts them. And that's good because, you know, like Babers, like, he worked with these people. He knows what their strengths are. This is going to be a little more open-ended just because, you know, we're not bringing the editorial team from ESPN over to run our athletic department. So as much as having David Hale running, you know, the ticket office.
Another Syracuse
would be
guy.
Fun. Yes. Only Syracuse. You know. Or having, you know, Andre Adelson, you know, do dome operations. I think, you know, it'll be way more interesting to see where he goes in those directions, and I think you'll see some unique things. And if anything, like we saw today, like this was like a big part of the news cycle. This was a huge story, if only because then every person at ESPN decided a lot of them knew him or, you know, had experiences with him. So we heard really quick that, you know, this is one respects and likes, so that can't hurt either.
No, not at all. And yeah, I think I do have a lot of faith here. I think Severud is not one to endorse groupthink mentality. I think the benefit, and even when Coyle brought in his folks, he didn't bring in everybody from Boise. He brought in a couple people from Boise, and it wasn't as if these were people that he had been working with for 30 years. These are like some people that he either picked up along the way or inherited when he got there. Like there was a lot. There was still a lot of different perspectives there. I think you saw the dangers of groupthink when Gross had, you know, many members of his Oregon mafia. If you started digging into the profiles of a lot of the higher ups in the Gross regime, all came from similar backgrounds and you know, all had similar career goals. All had there was very little difference. For a lot of those folks, and I think it showed, you know, with lack of oversight and other things. So for me, yeah, and I know you agree. I would just love a little bit of variance, and I think we're going to get it. And maybe we see some more outside the box thinking. I would hope it's a little more of a traditional group of hires, but. You know, if he wants to roll the dice on a role underneath him, similarly to how we're rolling the dice on him, I can't really doubt him there either.
Yeah, no, I think that's very legit.
Indeed. All right. You know what? We're coming up on halftime, so why don't we just go to halftime, and then we have We have more time to potentially not talk about Big Ten teams.
That's fine with me.
So what have you been drinking, Dan?
I'm just pulling it up now. I think, did I talk about the... Yeah, I didn't have a ton of new beers this weekend. Actually, I had a few that I forgot to mark down, unfortunately. I think the... fortunately, I was down the Jersey Shore, and for whatever reason, it's not a huge area for new beers, at least where I was. So I had some Sierra Nevada, and I had some other like kind of standard stuff, but nothing too crazy. And I was at a party on Friday, and I had a bunch of new stuff, and I literally can't remember what any of it was. And
means it was a good party
to put them on. It wasn't even that. I just did not put them on Untappd, and as soon as I left, I realized what I had not done, and so I can't share this with you.
Benefits of a photographic memory, Dan. I get to drink all day and then remember the next day what I drink.
You know, we can't all be so special. I'll see if I can think of some, but I'm not going to count on it, because they were all things I like hadn't had even like the they were all from like new breweries I hadn't had too. So you're all missing out on my great insights.
Womp womp. All right, on my end. Had from Smog City, had Incurable Optimist. It was their anniversary beer. It was a mix of a wild ale and wit beer. So had a lot going on, but in a good way. Smog City's Grape Ape. It's an IPA with a white wine, grapes, must thrown in there. So one of their better ones. It comes out a few times a year. I grabbed a growler of it. That was enjoyable. As I mentioned last week, Lunch has been appearing from Maine Beer Company in LA, which is awesome. So I got to have a little bit of that at a couple different spots. Firestone Walker's Luponic Distortion IPA has their second batch out. And it's a little bit different than the first. It seems a little more tropical, but other than that, just a good standard IPA that you can find a lot of places around here. Had Noble Ale Works Nose Candy, their Session IPA. Also saw Damnation from Russian River on draft over at Surly Goat in West Hollywood. And a buddy of mine in Texas sent a few different beers from some of his travels. Got to have some Gumball Head Pale Ale from Three Floyds. I got to have Pseudo Sue from Toppling Goliath, which I will definitely contend is one of the best pale ales around. Had Terrapin Beer Company's Hopsecutioner, and then just drank some craft beer at Dodger Stadium because their only thing under like $10 now is Budweiser.
Ew.
It's not great. It's cost $17 now to drink 329 Lager, which is not even like an amazing beer from Golden Road. You would think that being bought by AB InBev would have reduced the price on that, and instead it's actually gone up by about $5.
That's crazy. Like, that's one of the things I appreciate about a city. Like, obviously it's still expensive because it's a ballpark, but you can get some, like, decent beers for, you know, $9, maybe? Like, they have, like, their New York beer stands, which have legitimately good things, and they have, you know, some other ones. Like, there's at least a very solid, if not, like, you know, won't blow you away, but a lot of local stuff, and it's not crazy expensive compared to definitely compared to like MSG and Barclays in the city, so, and Yankee Stadium. So $17 is crazy.
Yeah, I like LA's beer prices are always a little out of whack. At Dodger Stadium, they were actually reasonable. It used to be about $12 for, you know, a tall boy, a 329, and that was actually pretty solid. And now, I mean, the prices there went up. Everything's kind of out of whack. I mean, again, $9 for a 12-ounce Budweiser is about as good as you're going to get beer price-wise. It's not great. A little disappointed because I felt like they've made so many strides on that front, and now I feel like they've taken 50 steps back.
And you guys, you know, you're the Dodgers, so.
Yeah, I mean, they won. It was a fun game. I went on Monday, so there was all the fireworks and all the other shenanigans. We actually went with my buddy, who's a big Orioles fan. So got to enjoy a nice back-and-forth game. Dodgers came back and won late innings. And then, yeah, got to enjoy my 4th of July at the stadium. definitely recommended if anyone didn't spend their Monday at the ballpark, which based on my Facebook feed seemed like a lot of people did. It's not the worst way to spend a holiday.
Fair enough. I'm hoping to get to City hopefully Sunday. I haven't been in a while. It's been like a weird... Last year I was at... I probably went to like 20, 25 Mets games. This year I've been to one.
Who are you going to buy season tickets this year?
I was. I'm glad I didn't. it fell through like last second, and then that worked out because I wouldn't have been able to go nearly as much as I wanted to. I mean, I probably would have gone more just because I would have felt bad about not using them. But yeah, so maybe next year. But just schedules haven't worked out as well. So, but hopefully I get back on this, you know. And part of that was like the Mets looked really bad for 2 or 3 weeks. But now they're
looking good again. It's the best time to go because they're cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, they're still pretty inexpensive. I thought there was going to be a bigger bump in the secondary market prices.
Mets don't get bandwagoners.
It's been like, you know, a little bit, but it's still, you know, if you're going on a Sunday afternoon and it's a non, like, Yankees or Cubs opponent, like, you're still going to be able to get in for, like, $20. So, hopefully going to do that at least once this weekend.
Nice. Yeah, I won't be at a... I mean, I saw the Mets against the Dodgers out here this year, and I won't be at a Mets home game this season. And it doesn't look like next season either, which is bad, because I'm going to be in town for a wedding in March. So season hadn't started yet. I was hoping the wedding was going to be in April or so, so I'd be able to catch a game. But nope, we're going to be there actually during what would be the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. So perhaps if...
Which are at MSG, right?
Yeah, they are. So perhaps if that works out, I'll be seeing everybody at MSG.
Hey, Andrew White, maybe you should come to Syracuse so John can watch you play at the Darden.
Yeah,
as a 1 or 2 seed.
Yeah, let's not wait 6 years between times that I see Syracuse basketball play again like I did last time. But on that note, Big Ten basketball. Since we did talk about Andrew White, who is a potential transfer from Nebraska. So, I don't know, Dan, where do you want to start here? Ohio State?
Sure.
They're good again.
They're really good. They're like 50-4 over the last 4 years, I think.
That'll happen when Urban Meyer's your coach.
They have Urban Meyer, who's one of the two best coaches in the country.
As we discussed last week.
Yeah. they have JT Barrett, who's one of the 5 best quarterbacks in the country, and they're actually starting him because they're smart, unlike last year when they overthought the entire thing. Otherwise, they lose a lot because they had, all of the first-round picks?
Yeah, but who cares? Because if you just replace 5 stars with 5 stars, it's fine.
Yeah, so I think with Ohio State, there's going to be a bit of a... If not a rebuild, I think it might take a little bit, especially on defense where they lose just so much talent. Offensively, I always, as you probably know by now, if you've listened to these previews, like if you back, I trust you just so much more than I trust you if you don't. And JT Barrett, especially 2 years ago, once he really got going as a starter, he's incredible. Like he is so accurate, makes all the right decisions. He's dangerous with his legs, but that's not like his only thing. Last year, they turned him into this weird, like, he was the designated runner, and then they just didn't have this rhythm with him because they went with Cardale, which I get to a point. But I just think they overthought the whole situation. JT was unbelievable for most of the season. Cardale stepped in and had 3 great games and won the championship, but, you know, they were also blindsiding teams because no one knew what he was, and they were playing their best football. So, obviously, last year, they were way better once Barrett took over the job, and down the stretch, they were terrifying. This year is going to be really interesting. They have Oklahoma week 3, which is going to tell us a lot about this entire college football season. They're both definitely in the playoff conversation. The game's in Norman. Oklahoma obviously got in with 1 loss, but that might be tough to do again. Like we're still trying to feeling out what the playoff looks like from year to year. And obviously Ohio State, like they're going to probably need to run the table or, you know, maybe sneak by with 1 loss if they can knock off Michigan State and Michigan, which is going to be tough like it is any year. So I really like them, though. They're super talented. Like outside of Alabama, they're probably the most talented team in the country. They have a lot of guys who have just kind of been waiting in the wings who are 4- and 5-star guys and just crazy athletes. And they have, you know, outside of Deshaun Watson, I don't know that there's that many quarterbacks that I would automatically take over Barrett. Like he's just very consistent And I expect him to get off to a hot start this year because he doesn't have to deal with all the nonsense from last season.
Yeah, I think consistency is something that, Meyer probably should have instituted, especially with Tom Herman gone. It just would have made a lot more sense. Instead, he allowed the team to kind of bounce around. You saw a little bit of a championship hangover. There was a little bit too much of a sense of accomplishment in the team going into the year, and you definitely saw them mail in some games against lesser opponents. The fact that Michigan State was able to beat them the way they did was kind of the nail in the coffin for me in terms of...
Without Connor Cook.
Yeah, without Connor Cook.
Yeah, that's such a mystifying game.
I watched the whole thing. It didn't make any goddamn sense the entire time.
No, nothing about it.
But Ohio State played like shells themselves. I've got a similar thing happening to them this year as did last year. I think they're going to lose one game to one of the big two in the division, and that's going to serve as the tiebreaker that they don't want. I've got Michigan winning the East, which I know will overjoy anyone who produces content on the interwebs.
Oh God, Jim Harbaugh on Twitter after that. It's going to be so good.
Oh, it's going to be the best. Like, I can't even begin to think of the shade that he's going to start throwing. Like, I mean, he's not going to be throwing darts. He's going to be throwing bombs at Michigan State and Ohio State if Michigan wins the East.
Are we rolling into Michigan now?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Yeah, so Michigan is basically like the inverse of Ohio State, not only because they're Michigan and Ohio State, but just in terms of their roster construction. Michigan basically brings back everyone on a really good defense and adds Don Brown from Boston College, who is a really good defensive coordinator who did really good things with the last couple of years with a pretty limited team, as we know. And he has guys like Jabril Peppers and just really, really good. Harbaugh actually inherited like a way better situation than people realize. Like Hoke was a trash game day coach, but he could recruit. Like, I don't know really how he could recruit because, like, Brady Hoke has negative charisma, but he could. So they have a pretty loaded defensive roster that should only get better with Brown. Not that DJ Durkin was a slouch. He obviously did a really good job, but Brown, like, is about as good a defensive coordinator as you'll find. Offensively, I still have questions because their quarterback situation, like, unlike Ohio State, they have playmakers. They, I would say, probably don't have quite as much raw talent as Ohio State does, but maybe a little more experience. But quarterback is going to be a major question. You have just a litany of guys, and it doesn't seem like there's a clear one stepping out. So if they find one, like if one of like the four guys in contention step up, then maybe it's a different story. But there's no one with much experience except for John O'Korn, who played at Houston and had like a really good freshman year. We were actually recruiting him pretty hard a couple years ago. Really good freshman year, kind of fell off the table and lost his job, and then transferred. So he's an interesting one. You have Alex Malzone, who's a young kid. I think he's coming off his redshirt year. You have Shane Morris, who was murdered by Brady Hoke a couple years ago. So there really isn't an obvious answer there. So it's one of the more intriguing quarterback battles in the country because it's just like all question marks. It's not like Notre Dame where they have the two guys who have both played really well, or Ohio State last year.
Yeah, I'm going with O'Korn, just out of experience. But yeah, I could definitely see Harbaugh, and this is where Michigan could definitely falter. I could see Harbaugh doing a little too much shuffling at the beginning, and potentially, seeing this team kind of struggle to find its identity on offense. They do return a lot, which I think is huge, and they return a lot, at the key positions other than quarterback, wide receiver, and offensive line. I think that's going to be big for them, but again, I the quarterback situation, and you did bring up a good point, does worry me a little bit. It worries me at Michigan State as well, since we're segueing here. Michigan State has to replace a lot, I think, on both sides of the field. Obviously, Connor Cook, while not completely indispensable, I mean, he did play in that Alabama drubbing, so it didn't really do much good to have him in. And obviously he didn't play against Ohio State at all, and they still won that game. That said, Cook was a good college quarterback. He helped Michigan State get to heights that they hadn't seen in decades. I think Michigan State takes a mild step back, but I do think that they, unlike the last times that they've done this, I do feel like D'Antonio is figured out a way to create and build some real quality depth at, you know, at East Lansing that, you know, this program wasn't prior to the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think just on paper they're running third, and this could be awful for us if going, you know, if in a couple months they're jumping out ahead and look great, because D'Antonio, we also talked about in that discussion for like one of the five best coaches in college football. He's really, I mean, he turned them into the premier program in Michigan for the last, you know, 6-7 years. They are interesting. They lose a lot. They still have some really nice pieces on defense. Blake McDowell's one of the best interior linemen in the entire country. They have a nice linebacking core led by Riley Bulla, whose name should sound familiar to Syracuse fans. They have, you know, they have really nice pieces across the board. They're actually recruiting now at like they've kind of taken that step forward in recruiting, so they're starting to get more elite talent. But I think those guys are a lot younger. So yeah, well, I mean, they lose Tanner Cook, who, like you said, wasn't I wouldn't call him like, you know, an elite college quarterback, but he was super productive. He could make all the throws, and he led them to a lot of huge wins. So it wouldn't shock me. I think on paper you're probably looking at like an 8 or 9 win team, but. You know, like we said about like that Ohio State game last year, counting out Michigan State is, you know, do it at your own peril. And it wouldn't shock me if they were able to stun one of the two big teams or, you know, make something huge happen in those crossover games. It's tough, though. And then they, I think they opened with – no, that was last year they opened with Oregon. I didn't think they did that
Furman.
Again.
They got Notre Dame. And well, actually, no, they have the second week bye, which sucks. And then they have week three – at Notre Dame, but with rest.
I forgot they had Notre Dame back on the schedule this year. So that's going to be a really interesting one. There's this week two kind of takes a nap, but then week one and week three are so good.
And there's, you know what? Michigan State's schedule does cooperate, not going to lie. They have Ohio State and Michigan at home.
Yep.
Their only two like real challenges on the road are Notre Dame and Penn State. And even then, I don't really think Penn State's all that much to brag about.
Who knows what Penn State is? They do have to host Wisconsin, which isn't like ideal in terms of the West crossovers, but at least they're bringing them. I don't really buy Wisconsin, but you never know when they're going to have like one of those crazy 400-yard rushing performances.
All right. So,
and they have BYU, which is
always weird.
Yeah, and Northwestern. You know, they had a nice year last year, but then Tennessee kind of ruined their lives. So it's, I don't know, they have an interesting schedule. It definitely could work out for them. If they beat Notre Dame week three, then they're probably for real. And that could always happen because Michigan State has given Notre Dame problems in recent years. Not, they haven't played in a little while, I think, since Notre Dame did the half ACC thing. But I remember in my time as a Notre Dame fan back in the day before I was converted to the bright side, Michigan State was always kind of a thorn. And that was before Michigan State was like what they are now. So. That should be a really good one, and one of those like really telling early season games, like Oklahoma, Ohio State. You will know a lot about what college football will be in 2016 from week one and week three.
Yeah, and I think in general, just September, teams that are contenders are challenging themselves more in the early goings. I think their conference schedules are too. I mean, Michigan State faces Notre Dame and Wisconsin in the first month of the season, like you said. You know, Ohio State tests themselves against Oklahoma. Oklahoma tests itself against Houston and Ohio State. I mean, if Oklahoma is undefeated at the end of September, I'd be shocked if anyone can stand in their way in terms of the rest of the season. I think Michigan State, if they can finish September undefeated, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with in the Big Ten. I think, you know, their showdown later on with Ohio State, the second to last week, is built for game day at this point. If those teams can get through September unbeaten.
No, absolutely. I don't know if we're going to jump into Oklahoma now, but
until
they aren't in the Big Ten, despite what, you know, some people on the internet will probably tell you is imminent. No, but I totally agree with all that.
Yeah, you know, I was going to jump into Penn State and talk shit about them, but I think instead we're going to jump over to the West. For a little bit, anyway. I don't want to talk about all these teams, because they're all, just half of them are trash. So the cutoff point is going to be 4. So Minnesota, Illinois, and Purdue, you're out. We're not talking about
Minnesota, you're out anyway. You could be number one. You're out. Sorry. Shouldn't have sent that truck.
Shouldn't have sent the goddamn truck, and then things would have been different.
That's what you get. You don't get to be discussing our podcast. Take that.
So I guess we'll talk about Wisconsin, not because they're the best team in the division, because I don't think they are, but because they're the most consistent team in this division year in and year out. We're facing them in 2019. I, again, don't know why. But, yeah, Wisconsin's doing that thing where, you know, they still don't know how to develop quarterback talent in a very long time. I still don't understand why. They just keep doing the transfer thing. NC State has actually copied them now and doing the transfer thing, which is funny because I feel like NC State Wisconsin was one of the original, like, grad transfer controversies with Russell Wilson.
Shout out to Russell Wilson getting married today.
Way to go, guy. You finally did it, literally and figuratively.
We did this for the SEO.
I'm definitely putting this in the podcast description.
As you should.
So yeah, you know, Wisconsin grad Russell Wilson today gets married, and now we're going to talk about his quote unquote alma mater. Wisconsin replaces a lot. Everybody really high in Wisconsin seems to not really care about that. I do. Because they're replacing half the line, pretty much any skill position player except for Rob Wheelwright at wide receiver. I don't love that. They're hitting reset on most of their secondary. Don't love that either. I've been pretty bearish on Wisconsin in my preseason predictions. I'm going 7-5, and I could even be convinced it's 6-6, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I totally get that. I think their one saving grace is their what it always is that their running backs are really, really good. Corey Clement obviously was hurt for part of last year, but a couple years ago when Melvin Gordon had that crazy season, like Corey Clement was also awesome. Oh, yeah. He just didn't get nearly as many touches. And then Dare Ogunbowale is also quite good for a backup running back and pretty productive. So if they get good line play, which, you know, is a staple of Wisconsin, though no guarantee, because they do have a lot of turnover, they should, you know, they're going to do what Wisconsin does. They could roll most of the Big Ten West every year.
Big Ten West sucks.
Yep. Very bad division, almost always. Last year was helped because Iowa, who I'm guessing we'll talk about next, came out of nowhere to be really good until they played Stanford. But otherwise, yeah. I mean, there's a reason why Wisconsin kind of has a stranglehold on this, and why seeing people, everyone's like, yo, why don't you put Michigan State here to make it a little more interesting?
Because when Michigan State decides to tank, then you once again have a shitty division, because Michigan State is not a job that you can sustain that sort of success at without very good hires in a row.
So where are we sending Mark D'Antoni? What job is he taking?
Well, not USC. Because USC would never do
no,
that.
No, that wouldn't be a USC hire at all. He's a what did he graduate? He graduated from South Carolina.
No, he's not going.
And obviously they didn't coach him. That would have been crazy.
Because that would be such a downward move. No, I've got him at LSU.
Ooh. So basically, he's just doing the Saban. Yeah. He's going full Saban. That'd be so funny.
I've got him at LSU. Although, you know what, though? I feel like Les bought himself 2 years now. I think this year's team goes 10-2. I think 2017's team's a death machine, which sucks because we're facing them in Baton Rouge. I think 20...
What are you doing, like Ewing theory on Fournette?
No, I just think the rest of the team is just too... I mean, you look up and down that roster. You're like, okay, you're going to be an NFL safety. You're going to be an NFL linebacker. You're going to be a top five NFL tackle by like your second year in the league. There's just too much there. We'll talk plenty about LSU later in the summer. But yeah, quick aside before we get to Iowa, I was looking at Wisconsin's top recruits. And surprisingly, for a land-grant school, they really don't mind their own state that much.
There's not that much there. That's true. It's not a great recruiting state. But they get like the big linemen. Like there's always linemen. Actually, one of them might start this year, Ben Schwazel.
Can we go back to Schwazel, though? Because I really want that to be his name.
Schwazel. if I'm not mistaken, because this name doesn't leave me, this was a Syracuse commit at one point. Right?
That sounds right.
And his dad was always, he's from Wisconsin, and then they
never coming,
offered him, and as soon as he got the Wisconsin offer, we knew he was done, which is fair enough. Like, his dad went there and played there. Yeah. So yeah, he flipped on October 24th, 2013.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm looking at like the top 10 recruits, like for Wisconsin, and like I didn't realize like how much they did some like worldwide recruiting here. They got Wisconsin, Arizona, Missouri, Maryland, Indiana, Ohio, Minnesota, Massachusetts, Kansas, and Georgia as like their effective top 10 recruits.
That sounds like a school that wants satellite camp.
That's exactly what they are, and I'm sure Paul Chris seems like a satellite camp guy.
Oh yeah, he's definitely touring. He's definitely touring the country.
Have fun with that guy.
Spreading the good word of Chris.
You know, if he was smart, he would only have satellite camps during the winter months, because why would you want to be in Wisconsin during those?
No, I mean, the one time I went to Wisconsin was in like August, so it was like when I went to Syria. It was really hot.
That sounds also awful in an opposite way.
I was in Green Bay, and I got to like tour Lambeau Field and all the facilities. Dope. So that was like baller as hell. But it was hot. It was really hot. and it's similar to my visit to Syracuse 2 weeks before I had to decide where I was going to college. After my parents decided to pack, or my mom decided to pack like winter clothes and jackets, and thought we were going to the Yukon. Not the school, the area of Canada, and it was 95 degrees, and I had to give like a presentation to try to win a scholarship in like full shirt and tie, and I was dying in the Maxwell Auditorium. So that was good times, but I chose it. You know, there was no snow, so I guess that.
Yeah, I went twice in October and once in April before I went to there. So I mean that is prime recruiting time for Syracuse.
Just like Boeheim says, this is how it always is. It's always 95 up here. I don't know what anyone talks about.
This is Miami North. Dumbass.
Hashtag. That quote is attributed to Dr. Gross.
So on to Iowa, speaking of gross things. Iowa was interesting last year. Early on, I felt like they were not fun to watch at all.
They weren't really fun after that either. They were just,
you know, good. What? Yeah, like they weren't fun either. But at least they were interesting. Like second half of the season, Iowa. Like you at least like, okay, like I understand why this team is undefeated, and like they're not amazing to watch, but they were more fun to watch than they were at the beginning when they were like struggling to beat Pitt and struggling to beat Ohio, like Iowa State. I don't see similar outcomes for them this year. I think they're gonna win the West again. And I think they're probably going to go somewhere in the 9-3 to 10-2 range.
Yeah. I mean, I think there should be some regression just because they won a lot of those really close games and they got lucky a couple times. They do have, I mean, if we're following my general rules, they have C.J. Beathard, who was way better than I don't think probably even he even expected. Like, they had like that weird thing where Jake Rudock went up to Michigan and Beathard was like, had been okay the year before and had some bright spots, but he was really just, you know, solid, effective, good quarterback play that you sign for most years. Nothing crazy.
In the Big Ten, you don't really, outside of Ohio State, you're not really going to get, like, amazing quarterback play anyway.
Yeah. And then their defense is rock solid. They have Desmond King, who's an awesome, awesome cornerback. Might be, like, a top 10 pick next spring. I think they should be good again. Kurt Ferentz will probably get another 20-year extension if they win 10 games.
The King of Iowa. It's gonna be the name of the movie.
All the corn to Kirk.
Fucking Christopher Walken is gonna play the King of Iowa.
I hope that, like, you know, Arizona gives their coaches, Arizona and Arizona State, like, give Rich Rod and Todd Graham like oil futures. Yeah. I hope Iowa just gives Kurt Ferentz like $75 million in corn futures.
Ethanol.
just ethanol money.
You know what? This country runs on corn in like 10 years. Again,
corn is in literally everything you eat, and that's probably good. Like, I'd probably take that. That'd probably be a very good economic move. I have no idea.
King of Iowa.
Don't go buy corn futures based on this podcast.
King of Iowa.
I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm a sports writer.
So you could have King of Iowa and like King of Iowa too, Mother Shucker. Would be
the direct-to-DVD sequel.
Yeah, so that's how much we talk about a top 10 team. The other team we're going to talk about is Nebraska, not because I want to, is because I feel like I'm going to have to.
They're not the opposite. I think Iowa will be pretty good. Nebraska's like the ultimate, like everyone thinks they're going to regress to the mean the opposite way and go from 5-7 to like, I think their Pythagorean wins last year were like 8+. Yeah. Because they had like 4 or 5 just absolutely heartbreaking losses.
And they beat Michigan State.
And then they had the one, absolutely bullshit win against Michigan State, which kind of helped balance things out.
And they beat UCLA too, which like, whatever.
Yes, they finished 6-7. But like they had like some of their losses were absolutely devastating. They actually have a nice team. I kind of like them. Tommy Armstrong, like I don't know that he'll ever be great, but he can, you know, beat some teams that don't really know how to handle his dual threat ability. Jordan Westerkamp, I feel like he's been in college forever. He's one of those guys that makes like a million great catches.
He sounds like Trump he belongs movie. At Northwestern, to be honest. You went to the wrong school, Jordan.
Brandon Riley's pretty good. Like they have a really they have an interesting team. Terrell Newby's pretty good. Divine Ozigbo's an interesting player. Another guy that was like kind of being recruited by Syracuse, and there was like a weird story there. So they could be. I'm kind of buying in on them, not to be like some people have them winning the West. I think that might be a little aggressive, but I think they'll definitely be in the mix unless the whole thing comes falling apart and it's just a repeat of last year. But that would be hard because last year, like I said, they lost some games by like you shouldn't be able to lose as many games in just gut wrenching fashion as they did in one season.
Yeah, I buy that. Although you know what. Like, you look at the schedule, though, and it doesn't really cooperate. You got Oregon. That's a loss. You got at...
Yeah,
like, their road games suck. At Northwestern, at Wisconsin, at Ohio State, at Iowa. Like, you could lose all of those games.
Yeah, that's why I don't know. That's why I'm not buying in them as, like, a 10-win team. And I don't think that's, like, the prevailing theory, but I think some people have had that, like, as, you know, they're going to flip it all the way. But, I think, you know, 8 or 9 wins, you know, right back in Nebraska's wheelhouse.
Yeah, we're right in Pelini territory.
Good thing we fired Bo Pelini.
Yeah, so that you could hire Mike Riley to basically do the same
thing. He's happy. He's nice, Pelini.
This is, like, look at this schedule. Like, they could easily start, like, 6-1 and then just, like, tank and maybe lose every game, like, from then on.
Yeah, I mean, they have that at least they have that respite in between at Iowa, Ohio State and at Iowa, where they get Minnesota, who, you know, not that that's a pencil and win at all, because Minnesota's kind of weirdly salty all the time, but never good. And then Maryland, who I don't think anyone expects too much from this
year,
maybe down the road. Next year, yeah. I mean, Durkin's recruiting really well, but they're still rebuilding. But yeah, like, it starts pretty easy aside from Oregon. At Northwestern, like, you would hope they would win that, but obviously, that's no guarantee because Northwestern, you know, every so often is pretty good as they were last year. But yeah, the road games definitely don't help. Like, you'd rather not play Northwestern in Evanston, even if that's not like the craziest home field by any stretch. But at Wisconsin, at Ohio State, in back-to-back weeks is pretty rough. And then at Iowa, going out of the pink locker room, not the easiest place either. So the home and away definitely didn't work out in their favor. But I think, you know, they could wade through this and get 8 or 9 wins if things break right this time.
I agree. And I guess the last team we'll talk about in the Big Ten West, because again, we're not talking about those other three trash teams, Northwestern.
Get out of here, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Stop listening.
So Pat Fitzgerald doesn't know how to put two solid seasons together in a row, ever, which makes Northwestern unfortunate. I don't mind Northwestern. They have a gorgeous campus. Football field's all right. They're not as close to Chicago as they want you to believe, but they're still pretty close in the big scheme of things. It's just that you wouldn't know that they played that close when you walk around Chicago and you see all this Notre Dame shit.
Can we bring up, before we talk about actual football, that Darren Revell, in response to our AD hire, Darren Revell said he wants to be the AD at Northwestern, and that's the greatest idea I've ever heard, and I want that to happen so much.
It would just ruin Northwestern for me, and you would think that the 43-42 defeat of Syracuse would have ruined Northwestern for me, but it didn't. No, I'm still on the Northwestern train because I always support solidarity with private school football, except Baylor. Fuck them. But yeah, I wouldn't want Revell to ruin Northwestern, but at the same time, I would want Revell to ruin Northwestern in spectacular fashion.
Oh my! I have no problem with Northwestern. But Darren Revell being the AD there would be so funny.
aside from the fact that we'd get, we'd have this weird thing where we have to play them, like, you know, he would schedule a 50-year contract with us in Missouri. Like, that would happen. That would be the first thing he did. We'd be playing both of those schools every year for the foreseeable future, which, unless we've turned it around, like, may not be the best thing, just because, you know, we want our wins. Not that we couldn't beat those. I mean, we have beaten both those teams recently. Hi, Mizzou.
So, yeah, see, that's the thing. I wouldn't mind that if the three teams were on an equal playing field.
Which they could be, but, like, it's not guaranteed.
Just throw Vandy in there instead of Mizzou. Then we're all right.
Do they have broadcast school?
I mean, Vandy's not really good at broadcast, but it doesn't matter. Let's just pretend. Let's call them non-meth Mizzou. And then we'll just plug them in instead. And we'll still call it the J-School Bowl.
Whatever. That works. We can deal with that.
That's fine. So, yeah. Northwestern, I really wanted them to win the West last year. They didn't. Of course, because Iowa decided to catch lightning in a bottle. The schedule cooperates this year, admittedly. Like, we could be looking at a 4-0 Northwestern going into the Iowa game.
Remember when they beat Stanford in week one last year?
That was wild.
That was an awful game.
It was god awful. And you know what? If I was, as someone who lives in California, if you flew me to Evanston for a what would be like local time, like 8 a.m. kickoff, yeah, I'd probably lose too.
True. That brings up week one this year, which is an 11 a.m. local kick against the Boat Rowing Western Michigan Broncos.
They're going to be loaded on Red Bull.
Oh my God, they're going to be so amped up. They might all pass out by the mid-third quarter in front of the no fans because Northwestern doesn't actually like start school until like the last week in September. but that is no gimme game. Western Michigan's pretty tough. And like you said, Northwestern, there's no continuity from year to year between Northwestern seasons. They're like the shows where they just scrap the whole plot line and cast. Like they're like the True Detective of the Big Ten. Like one year it's kind of amazing and maybe a little overrated, but like you'll look past it because it, you know, oh, this is a fun thing. And the next year you have just total nonsense and Vince Vaughn's running around with bad accents. Yeah. Like,
if True Detective went 10 years, though, because that's where we're at in the Pat Fitzgerald era.
Yeah, and that doesn't seem to be the case, because True Detective may never come
back. Yeah, I don't think it is.
Pat Fitzgerald, on the other hand, will never leave. No.
And you know what? Good for him. Good for him. He's Bizarro World Doug Marone.
He really is. No, it's like he's who we thought Doug Marone would be. If you want to look at that alternate reality, Northwestern is a pretty good analog.
So to close out Northwestern, here's the rough stretch for them. October, well, okay, we'll skip Nebraska. October 1st, at Iowa, they get a one-week break, but then at Michigan State, you got a pesky Indiana team, at Ohio State, Wisconsin.
It's not easy, especially because, like, even Indiana, who they should beat, that's no guarantee. Indiana has that weird game every year where they drop 60. That could easily be that game.
Oh, yeah, because...
like, Indiana almost beat Ohio State last year for no reason.
Yeah, just because they're Indiana. Like, screw it. Like, that's why Kevin Wilson keeps his job.
Yeah. Kevin Wilson should already be someone else's, like, really awesome offensive coordinator again, and he just won't quite be bad enough.
No, because he's going to go 6-6 again this year.
Yeah. I actually had to look it up because, like, at first I said that thing about Ohio State, and then I'm like, wait, was that the game where they, like, jumped out to a lead? But no, they actually legitimately almost beat Ohio State last year. They lost by 7 points. So Indiana can occasionally do things.
Indiana was actually a fun team last year.
They beat WKU, which is no slouch. No.
They were the only team. They were one of the only teams in the Big Ten that I like wanted to tune in every week.
Oh, and they took Michigan into double overtime, and they only lost to Iowa. But we're just talking about Indiana now.
Yeah, I wasn't going to, but while we're here,
Michigan State blanked them, like 52, not literally blanked, but like they just murdered them, 52-27, and then a bye, and then they lost to Iowa by a touchdown. They lost to Michigan by a touchdown in double overtime. They crapped on Maryland, and then they crapped on Purdue, and then they lost a pinstripe bowl thriller to Duke. Like they were pretty pretty pesky. Not
they,
good.
They were a couple
like,
breaks
were,
from like 9-3.
Their game. They were a game team. They took literally maybe three of the four best teams in the Big Ten. They lost by a touchdown. And you know, Michigan State just swamped them. But you know, you're not going to take all those teams to.
But they were very close to a 9-win team.
Yeah. They were a weird. They were like a Northwestern season from like, you know, just getting a couple breaks and having a really nice year. Yeah.
We'll close.
And then they could have lost to Tennessee by 75.
That would have been interesting. I don't think they would have though. I think they would have beaten Tennessee, and then we'd be talking about Indiana as a top 15 team.
Oh, that'd be so funny. And then they'd win five games this year.
I'd love that. before we get to just you know closing this out, because I know we're already in like double overtime over here. Penn State, you suck because you are demanding a statue to a man that has been, at this point, proven to be not great at best. F you guys. Shut up about that. We're not going to go any further into it. And then beyond that, Dan, who do you think wins each division and who wins the Big Ten?
I'm going to go with Ohio State. I just trust them the most. I trust Meyer. I trust Barrett. I think Michigan is getting a little too much love, especially like Michigan right now, the currently the most bet on team to win the national championship, which is all you need to know about Michigan fans. Like they'll take a mile.
They
find quarterback. Right. If they get a quarterback, they could do it. They have a very good defense. They should not be the most bet on team to win the national championship. I think they have the fourth best odds now, in large part because Vegas is like, I see what's happening here. Yes, we'll take your money. That's what Vegas does. I like Ohio State. This could be the year Big Ten misses out in the playoffs, though. I do not think any of these teams is flawless by any means. I think Ohio State's the most vulnerable it's been in a while, though they are wildly talented. Next year is probably Ohio State's year to like really put together another special season because Barrett will likely still be there because I don't see him being an NFL jumper. And they'll have like basically their whole team back. And then out of the West, I just don't see Iowa doing it again. But I don't trust anyone else in that league either. So I'm gonna say it's Iowa with like 8 or 9 wins, and it's just gonna be a really disappointing Big Ten championship. And Ohio State probably beats them by like 25 as they roll into the maybe playoff, maybe just BCS, you know. Or not BCS, whatever, New Year's Day.
I've got Michigan rolling over Iowa in similar fashion. I do also have Michigan playing, you're not going to like this, I have Michigan beating Alabama in the national championship game.
Holy crap, man. Like, I would actually love that. Like, I would love that from a professional standpoint. Because Jim, the summer of Harbaugh next year would be unbelievable. Like he might actually carry a fake Nick Saban head on a spike throughout his satellite camp tour. Like I can't even. But then he would say that he has all the respect in the world for him. It would be phenomenal. But Michigan fans would be so annoying. And in New York City, like there's no fan, as we always cover. There's no fan base that dominates New York City. But Michigan's easily in the top five, along with Notre Dame, Penn State, Syracuse, a couple others. One other top five. That's how that works. But they're definitely, like, they might have the plurality. And, oh, my God, there would be so much maize and blue, and I don't know that I could handle it, even though I have no inherent problem with Michigan fans. I just know that it would be annoying ahead of time. Like, there's just no way it wouldn't be.
I would 100% agree. And on that note, I guess we can close. We went again a little bit over, but it happens. We laughed, we cried, we laughed and cried. These things all do occur on this podcast. Dan, as always, thank you for joining us.
Yes. Hopefully, it's next week similarly eventful. Maybe Andrew White will commit, and we can talk about that for 25 minutes and talk about how amazing those rotations would be.
We actually don't have a podcast next week. I will be in Europe. So we will not be meeting because time zones don't work like that. We'll have a week off, and then I'll be getting back, and we'll be talking all about European beer and all the nonsense that I missed being so many hours ahead of everything. It'll be fun, and we'll talk my favorite conference, the Pac-12.
You do realize we're going to schedule, we're going to fill out our entire football schedule from like 2017 to 2022 while you're gone, right?
I'm going to be in such a goddamn rage if that happens. I mean, I'll be happy. I'll be happy, but I'll be in such a goddamn rage. Dancing.
Well, yeah, have fun in Europe. I will. I forgot that was happening.
I'll definitely enjoy it, and I'll tell you all about the British and Belgian beers that I get to drink.
Oh, I want to go to Belgium for beer so much.
I will definitely report back.
Sweet.
That's Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. Glad we have an AD. And, less than 2 months till football. Everybody rejoice.
Yes. Yes.